Welcome back to Talk Credit Radio. Did you get one of those emails recently saying your personal information may have been compromised? I did. It came from my credit card company. And a couple of years ago, my daughter, who was only 10 years old at the time, she got a letter saying her personal information, including her social security number, had been exposed online as a result of a school test she had taken. It's pretty scary to think about how easy it is for someone to get your personal information. Well, my next guest, Brian McGinley, is going to explain what to do if your data has been breached. Let me tell you a little bit about Brian. Brian served in the military intelligence community. He's a 30-plus year veteran of the financial services industry. He's dealt with risk, fraud, and the protection of information for businesses and consumers. He's also a volunteer firefighter and rescue technician in North Carolina. So he's no stranger to fighting real fires and the proverbial firefighting associated with preventing and responding to fraud and related business issues. Regardless of the venue, he doesn't want anyone to get burned. He's Senior Vice President of Data Risk Management for Identity Theft 911. Welcome, Brian.
Hi. Good afternoon, I guess.
Yeah, good afternoon. Well, we got a hot topic here, data breaches, and I want you to set the stage for us first. There was a study that recently came out from the United States Secret Service and Verizon in conjunction. They published their 2011 Data Breach Investigation Report, and the top-level take of this report is that while the incidents of data breaches are up, the number of records lost per breach are actually down. So what's your take after looking at that report?
Well, I think there's good news, bad news there. The good news is I think the reason the numbers of records are down is we had some unprecedented years of breach activity with large breaches involving, you know, hundreds of millions of accounts like the Heartland breach and things of that nature involving credit cards. And so I think you're starting to see the corporations pay attention and some of the people who are holding your data. One of the things, though, is that we see in the report is that they're migrating, you know, more to the point of least resistance. And, you know, fraud like water oftentimes goes to the point of least resistance.
And so what do you mean by that? I mean, is it easier for them to find places to gather our data?
Well, as the large corporations tighten up their controls and invest, you know, literally millions of dollars in trying to hold the line on, you know, both cyber fraud and just good old-fashioned fraud and acquisition of data, mm-hmm. Some of the data and some of the crooks are migrating to lesser hardened targets, if you will. So some of the smaller and mid-sized businesses are starting to get impacted. You know, we see it in everything from medical offices to attorneys' offices to, you know, smaller retail establishments, et cetera.
Yeah, we had a case here in Sarasota. It must have been a couple of years ago now where someone who was cleaning the medical office just was helping themselves to information in the medical files and then selling that information and using it for, you know, for identity theft and fraudulent purposes. So, unfortunately, I think I want to talk later with you more about what you can do to try to protect yourself as best you can. But unfortunately, I think there's just so many places our data is available that sometimes it feels really hard to try to do anything about it.
Well, you know, I'm one to say, you know, never give up the ghost because I think it's worthwhile. The less places that you happen to put your data you know, don't voluntarily give it out. I mean, that's one piece, is that oftentimes we give out way more data than we need to, you know, whether it's on your Facebook page or whether it's you fill out a warranty card and they want your birth date and things of that nature. It's kind of insidious, is that you find, because of marketing these days, they want all sorts of data so they can profile you. And basically what you find is you may end up giving out more data that could be used in the event of a breach than you may think that's out there. I mean, Epsilon is a good example of that.
Well, and let's talk about Epsilon, because that's where I received a notification recently from my credit card company where they said, you know, my information may have been put at risk. And in this case, I think it was, you know, it was tens of millions of consumers whose data was potentially compromised. Can you fill us in on what happened there?
Well, in Epsilon, I mean, it's still under investigation, but, you know, from what we understand at this point, and it's literally tens of millions of consumer records, but the consumer records, as we know it now, are limited to the names and the email addresses that are attached to the names. So it was reported on April 1st, so April Fool's Day, you know, we had a little bit of a surprise there.
So, no joke, huh?
most of us have received, I've probably received 7 or 8 different notifications from different entities that were breached, a lot of them being lifestyle type of entities, Best Buys of the world, Target, J.P. Morgan Chase. There are just, you know, if you think about what you do and the types of folks that typically are going to contact you in legitimate email, Epsilon serviced many of those as a email service provider.
So what if it is just a name and email address? I mean, that seems fairly innocuous. A lot of people can get that kind of information about you.
Well, here's the issue, is in the cyber world, remember, your name and your email address is really the portal to your front door. If you think of it as the portal right back into your computer. Hmm. And so the issue, you know, the issue becomes one of individuals able to launch attacks. I mean, there's bad guys out there, both, you know, domestically in the United States, but, you know, globally. And a lot of these cyber type of attacks are coming from, you know, Eastern Europe and Asia and, all, you know, basically all over the world. And with the linking of your name and your email address, what happens is basically they know, A, they've got a good target. It puts the individual on the radar of the bad guys, if you will. And having these name, email linked to, you know, a store like Target where we may all shop or Best Buy, you now have a trusted brand that's out there that when you get an email, you might be more inclined to answer it. And then, you know, in answering it, you potentially launch a malicious payload with a virus in it, or you potentially give up additional information that you wouldn't otherwise do if it wasn't such a, you know, a trusted-looking email.
Well, and these sites that they set up for, to, I guess the word is spoof consumers, they're really sophisticated. I've taken those tests online. I don't remember who sponsored it, maybe the Better Business Bureau, but you go to a site, you try to figure out whether it's legit or not, and the crooks can really make a fake site look like the real thing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they're, in some cases, they're virtually indistinguishable, and in other cases, they actually have links in the site that will take you back to the legitimate merchant site or the legitimate company site. So you're literally going back and forth from the bad guy's portal into the legitimate portal and back again. So, it's awfully difficult to determine, and oftentimes is they've literally duplicated, you know, frame for frame, the website that belongs to the legitimate company.
Well, I want to get into some tips to protect yourself in just a moment. First, I want to thank our sponsors. Talk Radio Credit Radio is brought to you by YouCanRefi.com. They specialize in helping homeowners like you increase your savings and reduce your debt, even if your home value has declined. That's right. Find out if you qualify with no obligation. Just give YouCanRefi a call at 1-888-777-YouCan. That's 888-777-9682, or visit their website at YouCanRefi.com. And by Credit.com. Everyone knows your data, shouldn't you? With tools like the free credit report card and the free identity risk score, you can find out what the financial companies already know about you. For more than a decade, Credit.com's been helping people just like you make better credit decisions, and they'll help you too. Just visit Credit.com. So, Brian, what's the very first thing you suggest that consumers do if they get notified that their information has been part of a data breach?
Well, first of all, take a deep breath and don't panic. Understand that, you know, there's literally thousands of millions of notifications that are probably going out there, and I guess the good news here is that a very, very small proportion of those notifications will actually result in criminal utilization of the data. I mean, that's what we know now. But it's really time to be alert and be aware, number one. I would say also that if you get one of those notifications, go ahead and if they provide an 800 number, go ahead and call that 800 number and try to determine the facts and circumstances of the breach so you know when it occurred, what duration it occurred during, and the types of things and types of information that they may have that they believe may have been breached. So I suggest proactively reaching out for that.
A very popular response to something like this, Brian, is for people to say, well, I'm going to put a fraud alert or a credit freeze on my credit profile, my credit reports. What do you think about that, and when do you say yes, and when do you say hold off?
Well, it really depends what happens, and again, that's why I suggest reaching out for the facts and circumstances. Sometimes, if it's just information, you know, for example, you're in the Epsilon case, your name and email. Right now, we don't have any indication that they're using it for financial fraud, so it's probably premature to go through the putting on fraud alerts and putting on credit freezes. If you start to find the utilization of your data where it's proliferating, i.e., somebody's opening up accounts in your name, then you need to get serious about, you know, putting on credit things like credit freeze. If it is a financial related issue, then a fraud alert may be worthwhile to put on. But again, I think you want to do it situationally based on what you know about the situation, and then you want to be alert. So if that situation changes. And remember, oftentimes you know what you know when you know it, and as you're notified, things change down the road when folks may be getting a better understanding of what's happening.
Well, and I think sometimes it's really hard to tell when things are happening exactly, you know, what to do. So I would say one of the things probably is to go ahead, I presume you'd agree, to check your credit reports and see whether there's any indication of fraud.
Yeah, I would tell you you might want to wait 30 days to check it, because oftentimes you won't see that type of activity immediately coming up. So again, if you understand when this occurred, if it's been going on for a while, yes, absolutely check your credit reports. It's probably a good idea. But understand the limitations of the credit reports are someone has to have made a financial type of inquiry on you, i.e., applied for a credit card or perhaps applied for a bank account. If it's things that are taking a turn like medical identity theft or things of that nature, credit records aren't going to help you too much.
Well, one of the things that I've heard is that sometimes these crooks who buy stolen credit card information or information used for identity theft, they sit on it for as long as a year before they decide to use it. What is your view on that?
That's true. I mean, we have run various tests where we've seen people, you know, intercept online banking credentials and use them within 6 minutes. We've seen others where they've sat on the material for, you know, a year or longer. The majority that we see these days, they'll tend to use the data, you know, within the first 6 months at least. But, you know, there are exceptions.
And so you mentioned the topic of medical identity theft. What are some signs of that? I mean, how do you even know if that's starting to happen?
Well, you may get calls on, you know, potentially from pharmacies. You may get collection calls from doctor's offices or from medical firms that say, gee, you know, we saw that you had a service and you haven't paid your bill, or whatever the case may be in that particular realm. Oftentimes, you're going to be in a reactive state. There isn't too much out there proactively from a medical record standpoint that's going to tip you off in advance of it.
I'm talking to Brian McKinley with Identity Theft 911. He's a security and fraud expert, and we're talking about what to do if your information has been compromised. So what about going online? I mean, that's where my information was potentially compromised. In the Epsilon case, it was my email address. I do like online banking for convenience. But tell me some of the pros and cons and some of the safety measures that we can use to make it safer if we're shopping or doing financial transactions online.
Well, you need to be vigilant in all aspects of your life, whether it's online or whether it's, you know, you're at the store or whether you're using the U.S. mails. You know, basically we find what we call attack vectors, you know, can come from any of those three that I just mentioned and considerably more. One of the things, you know, if you're doing online, you obviously want to have good virus protection. You want to have it updated regularly. But, you know, with a warning is there are viruses that, you know, basically mutate and aren't picked up by the current virus protection. You might hear them referred to as zero-day viruses, meaning it's the first time it's evolved, therefore the virus definitions that you have aren't going to pick it up. So there is a risk of infection there. If you think of, you know, safe computing, if you will, it's really, you know, some of the basics of not opening emails from people that you're not expecting emails from or you don't know. Never click on links that are embedded there. That happens to be one of the big infection vectors that are out there. is links that are embedded, those little, you know, email addresses. All of a sudden, that can launch an executable and put a virus in your machine that can literally circumvent your all your other virus protections, create a call out and, you know, log keystrokes or capture your user ID, password, and that type of activity. So those are the things that you need to be aware that's out there.
Well, Brian, what about social networks? I mean, if I'm on Twitter or I'm on Facebook and someone has a link, a lot of times I will go, you can't tell what the link is because it's a shortened URL. Is that safe?
Well, it depends if you're if you're using your same Facebook account and Twitter account for online banking, you really want to be careful about embedding and about clicking on any embedded links.
Mm-hmm.
Twitter has been compromised in that regard. Facebook has been compromised in that regard. Any trusted resource that folks can get to you, and even emails that appear to come from friends. Many of your listeners may have seen where they've gotten emails from friends or appear to be from friends where the friend had been infected with the virus. Their contact directory out of their email had been compromised, and the bad guys were contacting the people in their email directory to try to solicit funds from them.
I have seen that kind of incidents where someone has an email has come looking like it's from a friend, and then 2 hours later, the friend says an email saying, "I didn't send you an email. Don't open it. It's a virus." So I think it's really tricky for people to know when something's legit or not.
Well, that's why it's the bad guys are being very successful. It's a numbers game, if you do the wrong thing once, they can get you. But the key thing is, if they do get you, you want to be alert enough to understand that there's changes in the environment, whether it's in your financial picture or whether perhaps you're locked out of your email and you put in your password and all of a sudden you're locked out of your own email account. When you start to see things that you used to just blame on the computer or blame on, here's another Microsoft problem that needs a patch, you can't ignore those things. Oftentimes they can be the harbinger of, bad things to come because somebody's knocking on the door or gotten in.
Brian, give us some tips for strong passwords because this is really tricky. I have so many passwords, and trying to keep track of all of them and also make them strong and something not easy to hack, what is your suggestion?
Well, a lot of times people may want to use a type of a passphrase where there are different pieces that are put together. Certainly in a password, it needs to be a minimum of 8 characters long based on the current password crackers. You don't want to use typical words because they use what is called a dictionary attack, meaning literally they can go through a dictionary and bounce those words up against you. Oftentimes you may want to use a special character in it if the password allows for it. And when I say special characters, I mean things like an exclamation point or the hash sign or the dollar sign in there. But you want to make sure that it's at least 8 characters long, that it has an alpha and a numeric component to it, and, go the extra step. In my passwords, I would put a special character in it if, in fact, the device accepts special characters.
Well, I signed up for a service, and I'm not going to name names here or make you name names, but I signed up for a service to try to help manage my passwords and store them. What do you think of those things?
There are a few out there that are good. I would be careful, and I would look for something that is reputable, and, I can't endorse brands or anything else, but there are, 3 or 4 of the majors that are out there pretty resilient in terms of and robust in terms of fraud protection and from somebody getting in there. What I would tell your listeners is whatever you do, don't cache your passwords on your computer in like a Word document or an Excel file. A lot of folks like to do that, but the problem is once somebody gets in there, they've got access to your machine, they run a search word like password, and lo and behold, up pops the passwords to all your different accounts and things that you may have access to. So I would tell you that some of those tools that they have out there are pretty good, and I would recommend them if you're just overwhelmed with the number of passwords you have.
Yeah, I guess I better get rid of that file, huh? Well, one more thing before I let you go, Brian. I was reading online the other day that it looks like there's an effort to move away from the typical username and password as a way to log into financial sites, and if I remember the article correctly, they were saying there was an effort by the Obama administration to lead an effort to try to come up with a more secure way for consumers to conduct financial transactions online. What's your view, using your crystal ball? Where do you think we're going?
Well, I think you're going to see a couple different pieces there. Is we cannot continue to do more of what we do now. So I think you will find, you know, what you're referring to is multi-factor identification, and part of the multi-factor is making sure that you have what's called a dynamic password instead of a static password, meaning if my password's, you know, cat dog, that's static. It's going to remain there. But if I have a token, for example, that generates a new password or a new set of numbers, you know, every 60 seconds, those are the types of things that I think that you will see come into play. Some of it will be transparent because I think you'll start to see software programs that will be embedded in various computer applications that will be able to generate these automatically. But that's where I think you're going to end up.
Okay, so I said one more question. I lied. Can I ask you one more?
Absolutely.
All right. I want to ask you about mobile phones. There was a story recently that where reporters displayed a map showing exactly where he had been over, I think it was the past several months, tracked by his iPhone. And a lot of us are using our telephones, our smartphones for online email access, for our social networking, for financial transactions. It seems to me that there's an awful lot of risk associated with it. So what are some basic things you can do to make your smartphone safer?
Well, if you're talking about the tracking in particular, number one, just a general comment about safety and security with the phones and the smartphones is read the manufacturer's instructions, whether it's Apple or whether it's a Droid. That there are ways that are built into the phones to improve and increase your security. And so you want to be deliberate about your security so that you know what the options are and that you take advantage of the options that you want to have. You know, there's a lot of folks who want, to be able to track, and there's, you know, like both Droid and Apple have a GPS unit in that you can turn on and off.
Mm-hmm.
The GPS piece, and that's Global Positioning Satellite, is the same thing that, you know, you get your directions in your car from, et cetera. If you want to turn it off, you have the ability to turn that off. There was an article just about Apple in terms of their ability to, you know, capture that type of information on consumers. But, you know, there are also countermeasures that can be done. You just need to understand and be deliberate about, A, reading directions, and, B, setting up the appropriate countermeasures that are there.
And can I ask you, do you use a smartphone?
I do.
Okay, and what kinds of things, you don't have to go step by step, but what kinds of things have you done to try to make your smartphone safer?
Well, first thing is put a password on it. You can just go right into your tools and put a password on it so that if it's lost or stolen, somebody can't get into my directory, somebody can't get into my email, and, you know, it's a very quick setup, takes a couple seconds to do, but yet if it's lost or stolen, somebody just can't pick it up and open up my directory, start making calls, get my email addresses, you know, fill in the blanks.
Okay, so basic password sounds like it could go a long way toward getting things started at least.
Correct. You can also encrypt the information that is both on your laptop and is on your mobile phone. So that's another way to go ahead and do it. There are encryption modules that are out there and applications that allow you to do that. So that would be another area that you'd want to look into if that's what you feel you need to do to encrypt the information there.
And as a parent, you know, with my daughter having a cell phone, I want to make sure she's safe. So these are the kinds of things that I think parents need to be aware of as well.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Jerry, let me just give you an example. You might very well want your child to have that GPS function turned on your phone so that if something, God forbid, were to happen, you'd at least have the ability to potentially find them. There are alternative ways to triangulate cell phones and things of that nature, but that's not what we're going to get into. So you want to be deliberate, and you want to figure out what do I want to use this for and what are my options to use it and how do I turn on the features that I want and turn off the features that I don't need but may expose me.
Well, thank you, Brian, for your time today. What website should consumers want to go to if they want to learn more about how to protect themselves?
Well, our website at Identity Theft 911 is IDT911.com.
Okay, and we've also got some tools at credit.com that can help you as well. Thanks, Brian, for joining me.
My pleasure. Take care.
Well, coming up, we're going to talk about the weekly mortgage report. You'll find out, do you have a good mortgage company or could you be working with someone better? You're going to learn step by step what to look for if you're thinking about getting a loan or refinancing. You're listening to Talk Credit Radio. We're live every week and on the web 24/7 at talkcreditradio.com.